Excuse me, it's the operator. Just need to inform all participants that this conference call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time, and you may begin.
Thank you, Lori. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. On the call on the 8th of February, the PEDNR call, we have Cheryl Langdonore, James Bladel, Alan Greenberg, Ted Suzuki, Mikey O'Connor, Ron Wickersham, Paul Diaz, Michele Nilon, and for staff we have Marika Koenig, Margie Malam, and Glenda Sanchez. We have apologies from Olivier Crépin-Leblanc, Jeff Eckhaus, Ollie Hope, and Siva Mutatsami. May I remind everybody to say their name before they speak? For transcription purposes, thank you very much. Over to you, Alan.
Thank you, Glenn. I see Paul and James have to leave in about 25 minutes or so. Now, the intent, the hope was that we could finish the recommendations on at this meeting and spend next meeting going over the overall report to allow Marika a few days to get the final document out. Assuming we still have some chance of doing that, Paul and James, are there any particular ones of the recommendations that you want to be here so we can discuss them first? And James has his hand up.
Hi, Alan. I'm glad that you asked that because I was just reading them over the lunch hour, and a couple of them jumped out at me. So I appreciate that you're allowing us to get these out first.
Okay.
My first comment was with recommendation number 3.
Okay.
Which is following expiration during auto renew grace period, which I think I've decided we will rename. If a registrar deletes a registered name, et cetera, and the name enters RGP, then the registered name holder should be able to redeem the name. Are we in effect saying that if a registrar deletes a name and it will go into RGP, it must, for recommendation 1, that the registrar must also offer that redemption to their registrant?
That is what it is saying.
Okay, I think that there's a much simpler way to say that. I don't have the language handy, but first of all, I don't think it's related to expiration at all. For example, it could cover the inadvertent cancellation or the deletion of a name in the middle of a term.
You're a nice guy for telling us that, yes.
Well, I mean, it could be unrelated to expiration. I don't think we need to qualify it here particularly. We can just say that, if a registrar offers registrations in a GTLD that supports the RGP, and they all will, according to recommendation 1, then the registrar must offer.
There will be some exceptions, but yes.
Yes. So I'm painting with broad strokes here, but I think you get the point is that we don't really need to build this from the atom and molecule up. We can kind of just build it from the general case down. So.
How do we make reference to who the registrant is in the post-expiration example?
Well, that's a good question, which brings me to my next comment regarding recommendation number 4.
Okay.
So kudos on the segue. I like the proposed alternative language better than the original. I think it's cleaner and more concise. Not surprisingly, do not like the word right. I would almost invert that sentence to say something like, the registrant cannot be prevented from redeeming or renewing a domain name registration by who is changes made by the registrar that were not done at their request. Something like that. So that's just an off-the-cuff swing at the language like that, but instead of saying they have the right to do X, I would rather say that registrars are prevented from stopping them from doing X.
Offhand, I don't see anything wrong with that phrasing other than, again, we're going to have to capture the issue at time of expiration.
I've got that, too. My next comment was relative to the definition of what we're calling registrant original registrant, RAE, registered name holder, time of expiration, etc., mm-hmm. can we define that to be the individual or entity to whom we try to deliver the renewal notification? Because I think that this was the person that either received or should have received or disregarded the renewal notification. So perhaps that's an element that we can work into our definition.
How about instead of trying to deliver the message, saying who was eligible to renew the name prior to expiration?
That's probably okay.
Because I think, otherwise you get into problems of did you really attempt to deliver it? And
yeah.
you don't want questions like that even raised.
No, I understood. I'm just trying to capture that.
I like what you're saying, and I think if we phrase it that way, the one who was eligible to renew prior to expiration, or immediately prior to expiration, I think that captures it.
Okay, and then recommendation 6, I think, needs to go away entirely. So I spent all that time becoming your friend just to turn on you at the very end. And the more I think about it, and I think based on the feedback we received from ICANN Legal, I understand that there's the right thing to do, and then there's policy. And this may be the right thing to do, but I don't think it has a place in policy. And I think that ICANN needs to be price agnostic when it comes to retail prices.
But factoring in the change that Michael made, we're really saying you must post the price. We're not saying we're setting the price, but you must post it and must make the registrant aware of it ahead of time.
I'm fine with price disclosure for all products and all services and all functions and all fees. That's fine in the general case. I don't think that we should be any more prescriptive than registrars should post what their fees are. So that's all I had.
That is a recommendation because that's not there today. The only one that it's there for today is the RGP redemption price.
Perhaps we might consider making that less specific to RGP or renewals or anything else and just make it more of a generic statement.
The new RA, we get it back into the new versus old issue if we try to do that.
Okay, well.
Can you perhaps suggest some words that meet the generalized case?
For number 6?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can do that. It won't be until later today, though.
Yeah, but if it's soon, so we have at least a few days before Marika has to commit all this to the report to discuss it.
She's got her hand up.
I still think the issue is important
happy.
that the registrant must know ahead of time what, essentially... We are saying that if you don't renew before renewal, before expiration, then, and the question is, what are the repercussions? And they should know that you charge $4,000 after, and they really want to renew now. As an example.
Yep. Marika has her hand up as well.
Okay, go ahead, Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. The first point in relation to the discussion on the definition of the registrant prior to expiration and the new language that suggested, I think it was something along the lines of who's eligible to renew the name prior to expiration. I think it might be problematic because it doesn't really define at what point, because if you look prior to expiration...
Prior to expiration.
Still, immediately prior. That's something that the feedback we got from legal as well, the more precise we can be there, the better it is, because that leaves some loopholes. Because, for example, if someone has at some point changed the WIS records because it's no longer person Y in the company but person Z in the company. So as precise as the more precise it can be, the better. I think the intent is right, and maybe it's some language that our legal team can look at as well and make some suggestions. On the second point on recommendation 6, just to clarify, I think the concern that was expressed by ICANN staff is in relation to the last sentence that is out now. It didn't really go against the fact that registrants should be notified of what prices are. It was more about this language that was in there that the price shouldn't change or might be value-based. I think that was the main concern, not specifically to the fact that a price should be posted somewhere and registrants should be able to find that, because as Alan said, that's also in existence for the FIFA RGP. It just says that it should be on the website, or a registrant should be notified of that at a certain point. So just to clarify that one.
So James, are okay? Michele's had his hand up for a while. Let's go to him, and then we'll go back to you.
Alan, I'm just going to echo what James was saying, the very last bit of what he was saying. He worded that very nicely, the idea of, you know, does registrars should, how did you say it, James, should display their pricing or disclose their pricing for products?
I don't remember. Something like that. It should be more generic, that registrars should disclose or post their fee structure or their price catalogs for all products and services, not just, you know, we shouldn't be tackling this policy by policy, that's all.
Isn't that getting too much into too level of detail? There are some things that may not be appropriate for you to post your prices on because they're specialized or whatever.
I would agree with you there, Alan, but I think what James is trying to do with saying is makes a lot more sense to me and would probably solve both the issue that ICANN Legal has with it, plus the kind of issues that, you know, people would have with this. I mean, don't get me wrong.
The legal issues were addressed by Michael's revision, though.
Well, you don't know that.
If Marika feels comfortable, I believe her.
Okay, well, I'm not going to say anything further then.
James, let's go back to you. If you can propose some words quickly, and I think you know what my intent is. The intent is that a registrant should be able to know prior to expiration. You know, and I'm not thinking of the case of this is the day for your annual price change or something like that, but should know prior to expiration what to expect in terms of fees if they do not renew until after expiration. Now, if you can word that in a clean way that you're happy with, let's get it on the list and see if everyone else can live with it.
Okay. And I had a hand raised on a separate issue, which was something to the effect of this person or entity that we're trying to nail down here, and we've tried to describe it 18 different ways. And you know, I'm thinking that what we want to say is something to the effect of the registered name holder, the individual organization that was a registered name holder prior to when the domain name was in an active state, most recent active state prior to expiration.
Okay.
I'm trying to bracket this between two events, which is any kind of inactive state, and any kind of post-expiry changes. So, but I there's probably issues with that as well that I haven't fully thought through. So,
yeah, go ahead.
And that's it.
Yeah, I'm not sure how, since at a point prior to expiration, you as the registrar know who is allowed to renew it or not. I mean, it's someone from whom you will honor taking the money and renew it, and someone from whom you won't.
Not true. In fact,
well, you'll take the money from anyone, but
right.
who owns it? Who's the registered name holder after renewal?
Yeah, Mikey has a good story on that. So anyway,
I understand, but yeah. So I'm not quite sure why ICANN Legal is saying that that would not be precise. Of course, they didn't see this new wording, but I don't know how you could be any more precise than that, other than there are judgment calls involved in all of this, and a registrar exercises those judgment calls both before and after expiration. Mikey.
No, this is Mikey. I won't tell my good story, but one other wrinkle to throw into this discussion is I think if we came up with a recommendation, I like James's idea a lot about prices, But I think if we came up with a price recommendation that broad, we might run into howls of people crying scope foul.
Well,
that we were outside our scope on this. So we might want to allude to the value of a broader statement, but recommend a narrow one until such time as a broad one was agreed to by the community.
You know, as I said, I have no problem with a wide one. If I were a registrar, I'm not sure I would approve of it, though. But okay, in any case, James is going to try to come up with some words on that one. Mikey, do you have more? Nope. All right, let's talk for a few minutes. James, did you have any other items?
No, that covers my list, and I do appreciate you allowing us to jump to the front of the queue to get those out. Thanks.
Well, there's no point in you not having an opportunity then complain later. We don't have a lot of later left.
I still might complain later.
You don't want me to come back with a rebuttal to that, do you?
No, and I possibly won't. I don't know. We'll see.
All right. Can we talk about 15?
This is, Ron, could I be on the queue for this?
Yes. On the existing topics?
Yes.
Yeah. With the understanding that James and Paul have to leave in 11 minutes, yes.
Right. Yeah. I just want to say something where we have been suggesting that all the messages be clear, then our policy should also be very clear. And when we get it really long worded, is it within the scope of what we could say for the actual recommendation, registrant at expiration, and then say more precisely defined as, but so that someone reading it fast doesn't have to read the convoluted, complex statement that is the precise statement, but gets the gist of what our recommendation is in more simple language. So can we include the simple language with the more precise definition?
Ron, I think I support that, and it's dawned on me as we're trying to finalize these wordings that this is for a draft final report that we need to get approval essentially in concept and get feedback on. If we're all agreeing on what it should say in overall intent, we will have another opportunity to refine the wording to make sure that it meets all the legal requirements.
Okay, good. Thanks.
So from that point of view, I think that takes a little bit of the pressure off of us. All right, if there's no other items, I'd like to talk for a few minutes about 15. This is the one that Michael made some significant changes to, and unfortunately he's not on the call. He basically made two changes to it. One is clarifying and simplifying the words that say if a domain is renewed during the 8-day period, it can be reinstated. The 8-day period doesn't have to be finished in full. And I don't think anyone has any problem with those wordings. He also incorporated what was recommendation something. I don't remember what, 16 or 17. And I note, by the way, this document has two 15s in it, which we're going to have to clear up. And my inclination is to separate them out again, partly for the reason that Ron just gave, that is to try to keep it simple, and because I don't believe there's any reason it needs to be restricted to the 8 days. And in fact, I think it makes registrars' lives easier if they don't have a transition, if they're already taking the domain and redirecting it for a significant period of time, more than 8 days. Any strong feelings on that? So essentially, I'm suggesting that one revert to the changes prior to Michael. I'll take silence as agreement, since there are no X's and no hands raised. Okay. Michael, James and Paul, anything else you want to raise before you duck out?
Yeah, just that I don't want to either confirm or reject Michael's changes yet. I really, really need to talk to some folks internally. I apologize for that, but I'll get something to the list by the end of the day.
Okay,
if I
appreciate that.
I don't want to, you know, we usually in the ICANN world, we say silence is agreement. I don't want to assume that's true.
No, that's why I'm giving you an opportunity to talk. Mikey.
This is Mikey. I think the difference between the two, between Michael's wording and yours, is that Michael's isn't talking about all the rest of the time.
That's correct.
And so I think you need to circle back to Michael and try your idea out on him.
Well, I did, and there was some email that went back and forth this morning on that, and his original take was that the domain is going to be redirected only for 8 days, and after that it will not be renewable, so it's moot whether the flash screen says it or not. And my expectation is registrars are not going to change immediately after this policy is in place, are not likely to change from their current 30 to 40 days to 8. In other words, penalize their customers because they don't like the policy that was enacted. So I think there may be an 8-day minimum, but the domains in many cases are going to be renewable past that.
Yeah, but I think the trick is that they may want to redirect the page to a site that doesn't say that the name has expired. When they monetize, they may not want to have that requirement.
Oh, I'm assuming this page we're talking about is a monetized page.
Right, but what the 8-day proposal is saying is that's a required behavior during the 8 days.
Yeah, the previous one said if
it's not required.
Okay. Yeah. The previous one said if it's redirected, that splash screen should have the message. If the domain is renewable, it should have the message. This one says only for the 8 days.
Ah, so I think that's the crux of the
the
problem, and you know, I think you and Michael need to butt heads on that and get to agreement.
Well, this is to a large extent a registrar issue, so Michael has made the suggestion, but I think registrars have to be comfortable with the answer.
Right.
Or at least go fighting and screaming, having said so.
I mean,
my preference,
of course, would be all the time, but I think that this is essentially part of the grand compromise that's underway here, so we have to be careful how we reword those.
Yeah, I was just surprised about his comment altogether, because this was one of the points that had prior, you know, sometime in November or December had been agreed to generally without any real dissatisfaction. So, okay, Mikey, do you have more?
Oh, no, I'll take my hand down, sorry.
Okay, James and Paul, anything? Otherwise, we'll revert to the original order and see if there are any other issues, and hopefully you'll look at whatever comes out of it and or listen to the conversation. One other thing to mention, if you remember at a previous meeting, Marika and I were delegated the responsibility of deciding how to do some sort of straw poll or formal poll. I think our conclusion was that doing a formal poll takes time. It's a fair amount of effort going into it. And we are likely to have to make sure everyone is still happy at the time the final report is issued, so that we would do an email poll at this point and essentially saying that silence is agreement, and try to identify the disagreement and when we put the level of consensus in the draft report. If that's not a major problem, then we'll go on and go back to the report going through it.
One other thing Marika reminds me is she did suggest at one point that perhaps we do not have any poll at all at this point. And my inclination is to say I think in the draft final report, we need to give the community some indication of what level of consensus we have. Okay, in the absence of any hand, Marika, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. I mean, the reason why I suggested that it's basically normally how it's being done as well in an initial report, where a working group basically says, well, these are the recommendations we're putting forward for community input, where the underlying assumption is that those recommendations have consensus, whether that's unanimous consensus or rough consensus. And I think as well, you know, if once we send this out to the email list saying, look, this is the final language that we're going to put in the proposed final report, you know, speak up now or it's going to be published. I guess at that moment as well, if people do feel uncomfortable, there's still opportunity as well to express a minority viewpoint, and that can be recorded as well in the report, like it would be done as well in the final report. So I think it's a bit of a combination of two, where we're sending this out and allowing people for saying, you know, I don't know if we want to put on each level saying this is unanimous consensus, or we just stay for the bulk. You know, unless otherwise stated, there is consensus on these recommendations, and these are the ones that the group is planning to put forward in its final report, unless there is some outcry in the community as part of the public comments, following which the working group might need to, you know, review its position or propose a recommendation.
That certainly sounds reasonable to me. All right. Shall we go back and do a quick pass through the document in order? Recommendation one is the requirement that GTLD registries support the RGP. I did check, by the way, there was a comment made that the RGP may be included in the applicant guidebook, and I could find no reference to it there, either under the terms redemption grace or RGP. Number two, that's the infamous definition of the RA of the registered name holder at expiration. Marika, did you capture the last wording that I proposed? And maybe you could pass that one by legal. And if they don't think it's precise enough, ask them why. And that
okay.
is the one who was eligible to renew prior to expiration. And that gives the registrar a fair amount of latitude to handle the special cases of the kind Mikey has mentioned. Number three is I think James had proposed some additional words for that. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So we'll go with whatever he said. Marika, if you captured it, that's good. Otherwise, if you could deal with James directly and try to get it.
Okay.
Number four, change to okay, that also... James had some words on it that simplified it significantly and inverted the sentence, and I think I'm happy with that once I see the words. No hands up. Five is that, excuse me, saying all RAA provisions are applicable to resellers, and ICANN Legal had some wording on that in their memo. See if we can pull it up quickly. Marika, do you have it quickly? Okay, here it is. All RAA provisions applicable to registrars and dealers. No, okay.
Do you want me to pull it up in Adobe?
Yeah, I thought I had it in front of me, but I'm trying to find it. If you have it, please. I'm certainly happy with those words. And Cheryl agrees. Okay. I think we have closure on that. Six is the one James is going to try to provide some simplified wording, that is on price disclosure. I'm a little bit leery, as I said, about the a very wide statement, but because I think that will be objected to. But I'm happy for simple rather than the complex. Seven, this is the education provision. Michael had suggested a word saying registrars who have web presence must provision a referral to it. ICANN's legal's reaction was the same as mine. That's a little bit unclear. And I pulled up in one of my emails the wording that's used in the RAA for the RGP disclosure, price disclosure. I'm sorry, not for the price disclosure, for the pointer to the registrant rights and responsibilities. And I would suggest we pull out the phrase from there and use that one in its place. No objections. Nine is a best practice recommendation. Marika, if this is now an ICANN responsibility, I don't think I don't think it's a best practice anymore. This is a recommendation to ICANN.
Yeah, I think that's correct. I mean, it's not a consensus policy either, so it's just a recommendation.
Yeah, but it's a recommendation which presumably, if everyone passes it, is effectively binding on ICANN.
I don't think in legal terms, but...
Well, not in legal terms, no.
but
If the board approves it, then presumably it shall be done.
Right.
Although the record of ICANN always doing what the board resolution that board passes is not all that great, but yes. 10.
Alan, it's Mikey.
Hand up.
Oh, sorry, yes, go ahead, Mikey.
I don't know exactly how profound this wording is, but you know, I'm sure that the business constituency would want to help with number 9 as registrants. And maybe other constituencies would as well. But, you know, in addition to registrars and ALAC, you could certainly add the BC to the list of folks to help build that educational material.
How about if we generalized ALAC to the user-related groups within ICANN?
Whatever works. It's, you know, I just wanted to make sure that you knew that you guys weren't standing alone on that.
Yeah, the ALAC is there because the original one was to be done by registrars, and they said ALAC must participate. Let's try to generalize that to user-related groups or something like that.
This is Marika. Isn't it better just to generalize it and others interested in the ICANN community or other interested parties in the ICANN community? Because seems otherwise that we're excluding those that might have an interest in the issue, but are not specifically coming from user meaning.
Yeah, my problem is saying with the support of, because that almost gives everyone a veto.
I think support may be in the sense of help rather than.
Okay.
So you know.
All right. Does anyone object to rewording this to make it more general? Then we'll try to do a good job with that. Number 10, the registration agreement. Okay, what methods are used? That one we don't have any wording for that I'm happy with. When Michael changed the original statement, which said what destination address number will be used, must also be specified if applicable, and he changed it to an either-or statement. and said provide full destination details, and I'm not sure that's clearer. Does anyone else feel uncomfortable with those words, or am I the only one? I think the either-or we have to fix. But I think being clearer what we mean here is better than using vague terms which may not be well understood. Michele.
Where's the wording from Michael Young exactly?
It's in the document on number 10. And hold on, let me scroll down to it and see what color it is from Rika's version.
I think it's purple.
Purple.
Oh, a second. Let me just read this.
I agree. The full destination details is kind of high on the techie scale.
I don't even understand what the hell that means.
Well, it could mean an IP address or a URL or something like that. But
yeah, if it's email, it says what does the to address say? Who is it going to?
Why did it say that? Because I'm sorry, Alan. With all due respect, I'm probably more technical than a lot of people who dial into this call on a regular basis, and I don't even understand that.
Well, look at what's at the right under deleted and the purple deleted. And that's what was there before. Do you feel that? Is that better?
Where?
On the right in the little box.
Okay.
The M. Young box.
That's in black, in yellow, and I'm having problems. What destination address number will be used must be specified if applicable. Is that right?
Yeah.
They're two different things, aren't they?
Well, I mean, the intent is if you're going to send email and you're sending it to the admin contact of who is, you should say so.
Yeah, okay, the
registrant should have a reasonable expectation of where the messages are going to go.
Where is this information going to be?
Either in the registration agreement or pointed to by the registration agreement.
Okay, here's a nasty thought for you, Alan.
Okay.
If I want to hijack a domain name,
mm-hmm,
and basically become the effective owner of it, then all I would have to do, if you implement this and make it policy, is gain access to the email address that you're going to specify here.
Yeah, but then you're hijacking the name.
But,
and then we're into the IRTP.
But isn't it moderately clear that the registrar is going to use at least one of the email addresses they have on record?
No, but the thing is, by being overly prescriptive, you're actually opening up another can of worms.
But you're also telling the registrant where to expect the email.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm with Alan on that one.
Well, I'd have to disagree with you.
That's fine. A first.
I mean, there are probably cases where the registrar uses an address different from any of the ones in Whois.
Yeah, but the thing is,
that's not common.
No, well, you don't know that. The thing is this, like, say, for example, I can speak to what we do, and I can see what other people do from my own experiences with them. I mean, what we would do is we send notifications to the billing addresses on our system.
Okay, then you should say you were sending it to the billing address that you normally get the bills from. Or, you know, I don't know what the words are because, you know, I don't know what your form says when they filled it out. All that this is saying is you should give them an expectation of where to look for the messages.
This is Marika. Can I just
sure,
add something?
Sure, please.
Because maybe just to clarify, because at least the understanding I had when I added the red words was the discussion we had the last time round, talking about the fact that in certain countries, you might not want to put those kind of details in the registration agreements because you cannot change those after, you know, you've signed the agreement with a registrant. And, you know, if you want to change from email notifications to Twitter, you cannot do that because you put it in the registration agreement. So the intent of the red wording would be that either you put indeed what methods you used in the registration agreement or you put in the registration agreement where you can find that information. So it would be the link or, you know, the policy document that you have. And I think this has gotten mixed up with something else because I think we're talking now about that those details should describe where that information is being sent, which I think is a separate issue. So maybe we should separate those out, or maybe I'm completely confused, but the intent of the red language was to basically allow for that, not having all the details in the registration agreement, but at least have there the point where that information can be found, so that the registration agreement is the point of departure for registrants to find the relevant information in relation to pre- and post-expiration notifications.
Yeah. Prior to his change, there was a separate sentence which applied regardless of where the information was. And he embedded it in that in the middle of the red and used more obscure words. Mason.
If the intention of the recommendation in the first place is to set the expectation of the registrant about how the registrant will receive information about the domain name, or renewals, or anything else.
Right.
I mean, that's the idea, right?
That is the idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not. This one shouldn't be this hard, but it's hard. I don't know. Maybe Marika's right. Maybe it should be broken into a separate recommendation, because I agree with Michele. I mean, if you get overly prescriptive, I think you stray into unintended consequences, and I want to be careful about that. I don't know that registrars would object to having the expectation set in the registration agreement. Beyond that, I think I need to look at that language and try to figure out how to finesse it, because full destination details isn't. I agree, it's not clear.
Yeah, the prior to Michael's change, but after the red, there were two sentences. One said the information on what method you will use must be specified either in the agreement or pointed to by the agreement. In other words, they must be readily findable. And there are words, again, in the RA currently that talk about, you know, must be displayed as clearly as other information.
Yeah.
And the second sentence said, if we're talking about, this isn't the wording it used, but it said, if we're talking about sending things to a specific destination, be it a Twitter address, an SMS phone number, an email address, you need to provide enough information so the registrant knows which of his five mobile phones you're using. Obviously not specifying the number, but in the generic term used within your other documentation. That is, we're sending it to the billing address, to the administrative contact, whatever it is.
Are you talking about I will text you on your cell phone? Is that what you mean?
Well, if your agreement says, if your agreement or the pointed to says, I will send at expiration time, I will send you an SMS. I think you also have to provide some indication of where you're going to find the phone number. You know, and it will be the phone number of record we have for your mobile phone or whatever.
Oh, I see.
I mean, I have 49 email addresses, and I use them not semi-randomly, but sometimes it would be perceived as that.
No, I know what you mean. Okay. All right, I'm going to lower my hand now.
And this
Mikey.
Is my... The only point I would make is that, in response to Michele's point, this information doesn't need to be public.
Oh, no.
I mean, it's not as though we're going to publish this to the world and say that the world can find out. It's more the just telling where a registrant can go look up those destinations and find out
now,
stuff.
Now, if the registrar document says it is the third WHOIS address we have, then the rest of the world can probably find it, too.
Right, but I don't think that's often the case.
Okay. It sounds like we feel more comfortable with the words prior to Michael than after. And, this is not locked in stone right now. I think it's more important to have something which is understandable at this point than the legal preciseness of it. So if that's the case, we'll try to make it as clear as possible, and we can agonize over the detailed wording afterwards. Eleven is the notification period,
we have never defined what the exception policy is. My inclination is, in the recommendation, is to say that there will be an exception policy allowing registrars, a mechanism that will allow registrars to seek an exemption or use alternate delivery times, to be defined and not try to define it in the last couple of days we have right now. I'm happy to do it without any exception at all, but I think we're going to find there are enough registrars in different parts of the world with different business practices that that won't be acceptable. So is it reasonable to say there will be an exception policy or an exception procedure, but not define it in details here? Mason?
Yeah, just a question about that last line. The timing of the two must be comparable to the timing specified. What does that mean?
If you send 49 alerts, there should be one somewhere around 30 days and one somewhere near the end of the period.
Oh, I see. Oh, the timing of two of them. I see. Okay. All right. Sorry. I'm with you. Okay.
Okay. Everyone happy with recognizing there may need an exception policy, but not defining it in detail here? No objection. 13. This says there must be must be some level of push messages. There had been no disagreement before. I assume there still is none. Post notification, prior to it not being renewable anymore, there should be some notification. Again, with the understanding that if the domain is disabled, some messages may not get through. Number
Alan,
15.
I found your extra 15. You have a 12 at the bottom of page 10 that's
12
at
the
used.
Bottom of page 10.
Roll back up to the page that has recommendation number 11. Down at the bottom of the page, you'll find
And 12 is missing.
Recommendation 12, which is very short.
Oh, no, but that was the exception process we were talking about, and we've just decided that we'll leave it out of this document.
Oh, okay.
There was supposed to be words there. We just never bothered writing them.
Got it.
Okay. 15, we've talked about in exhaustion, and I think I don't remember how we ended. Does anyone remember? That was the one that, do we include the message in the flash screen, in the splash screen rather, in this doc, in recommendation 15, or separate it out and keep them each short? Marika?
Yeah, this is Mark. I think we left this one off where both James and Paul said that they would provide feedback on this issue later
okay.
today.
Okay, fine. Then let's skip over it also. Recommendation 15, number 2, is this one is the one on modifying who is. That's the one we were pretty well unanimous deciding it should be done, but we have since backtracked and said, but we're not going to do it right now. Michael made a change to that to talk about what can be done today. I think our intent when we were talking about it was to exercise the extensible in EPP, and this would require changes if it were to be implemented, which is why we were not implementing it right now. So my belief is we go back to the prior version of 15. Any disagreements? None. 16, best practice.
Hey, Alan, Barry?
Yes, go ahead.
I'm driving right now, so I'm probably not coming in very clear, but...
You're clear enough. Go ahead.
Okay, the recommendation with respect to the EPP part, I'm not fully well versed on all of that, but if it's important enough, is there some kind of like a holding queue for system enhancement kind of thing so that, you know, 2 years down the road when they release the next version of EPP that some of that gets folded into it, or do we
absolutely no control once it's out of our hands.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Either we do it
or we cannot guarantee it's going to get done at any time in the future.
I think the point that Barry may be raising is, could we split the difference and put a request into that queue of whoever maintains the EPP standards and code and all that good stuff?
Well, it would have to come out of a consensus policy unless everyone gets together and volunteers to do it. The thought of doing a consensus policy purely for that one item is mind-boggling.
Well, I think what Barry might be getting at, I may be putting words in his mouth, I do that all the time, but Mason, Michaela, you guys maybe can help me out here. Is there, I hadn't even thought about this until Barry brought it up, is there a feature maintenance backlog queue request thing that sits in front of whoever maintains the EPP stuff that we could, make a recommendation, not a policy, but a recommendation that that group take a look at something like this for the next iteration of EPP?
Michaeli?
I'm not 100% sure, but I have a sneaking suspicion that EPP might be an IETF thing.
Yeah, well, that's what I was wondering, is if we could pipe this over to the IETF process somehow. I don't know exactly how that's done.
The general protocol was defined by the IETF. However, the details are specified effectively in the registry agreement. And, for instance, when VeriSign a number of months ago was looking at the, I forget what they called it, the ability to resell a domain partway through the year, that required extensions to EPP, which would have ended up in their contract.
Okay, forget the contract. We're talking about a technical thing here. The contract's irrelevant. Any registry operator can add extensions to EPP, which is why it's called EPP. Because it's by its own definition extensible. The problem is that while technically you can do lots of things, it may not be such a good idea. Because every time you add an extension, you're adding extra levels of complexity, and you're also creating levels of inconsistency. So unless you can make a change that all registry operators for all GTLDs and GTLDs can actually agree to, and you can get them to add that the same set of extensions at the same, pretty much the same time, you end up in a case where it's going to be something could be implemented by one registry operator and not by another.
You know, so, Michaeli, is that management of that, to make that consistent, is that usually done through the IETF process?
I don't have a definitive answer on that for you, because I honestly don't know. I know that any registry operator who wants to add a tweak, a quirk, an extra headache or whatever to their implementation of their flavor of EPP can do so. But I know from some of the conversations we've had with various registry people in the past on various working groups, making these kind of changes, it's something that nobody's particularly comfortable with because, it's working now, and this has got all the various different things. So adding something else in could cause extra problems, and you've also got to guess a whole range of other things. So I'm not sure exactly how you can add something in to EPP that kind of becomes part of the actual de facto standard. I honestly don't know if that's possible. I know for a registry operator to add something in, yes, that is possible.
One last stupid question, and then I'll let this bone drop, but I am a little doggy with a little bone in my teeth at the moment. Do the registries have a process that they use to coordinate this stuff, or do they just do it on their own willy-nilly. Same, I guess it's the same question. Instead of IETF, is it, is Barry's idea better directed to some collaboration of registries? And then I'll let this go.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think there is such a group we can direct it to with anything other than the kind of words we're using now, of a strong recommendation that it be considered. But there's nothing we can do to force any given group to consider it or to, and any stronger than that.
No, I think the issue that Barry raises is that irrespective of the puzzle we're trying to solve right here, there are other puzzles that are similar that it might be good to, not from a policy perspective, but more from an operational perspective, have some conversations with folks to see if there's any interest in, if there isn't such a thing now, setting something up so that, because if I was on the receiving end of a process like the one that Michaeli's describing, where every single registry can come up with their own tweaks to the protocol that I use to talk to all registries, that would drive me nuts.
But that, in fact, is the process right now. If a registry decides on a new service.
Alan, stop.
Sorry, yes.
I know that. The point that I think Barry is getting at, and I think it's out of scope for us, but a useful thing to acknowledge in this report, much the way we did in the IRTP report the last time, is this idea of preparing the way for a more graceful process to introduce consistent changes into the protocol that registrars and registries use to communicate with each other. And if I were a registrar, I'd be pretty keen on that, and if you want my support, I'd be happy to lend it to that kind of an idea. That's all.
Okay, let's go to Marika first.
Yeah, this is Marika. I'm wondering, apart from all the technical details, if through policy we could just say, look, this is something that we would like, and we'll deal in the implementation side how it can be done, but from a policy level, this is what we would like to see. And I don't know if this is linked as well, because we did have a similar discussion about this in the IRTP working group, where we had someone explaining as well that certain status values can be attached to certain statuses in EPP, which can have certain messages with them. And through policy, you could then require what that message should say, so it's clear to everyone what a certain status value means. So I don't know if that's a similar approach that could be explored here and probably is going to be as well explored in the context of IRTP. So, indeed, I think from a policy perspective, we could say what we would like, and even at a later date, it might turn out that technically it's not feasible or requires other organizations to be involved. But as a starting point, I don't see anything preventing us to say what we would like to see as an outcome.
Is that within our scope other than the specific one we were talking about here in terms of our charter?
Well, we could use the one that we're talking about here as a way to trigger that conversation, sort of the way we did in IRTP. And
Mikey, could you come up with some draft words? Or Barry?
Barry, are you still on? Barry, if he's still on.
Yeah, Mikey. I'll take a first stab at it. All right, cool. But, yeah, you said everything that I was thinking about, so thank you.
Okay, Michaeli. Thank you, Barry.
Just going back to what Mikey was talking about, I know from talking to our programmers that the custom extensions that registries may choose to slap on to EPP cause much hatred, bile, cursing, and kicking of furniture around the place. There's a few registries that my programmers like for the simple reason that they use what they call, vanilla EPP. It's the EPP protocol. no fancy extensions, nothing extra, nothing crazy, and all the stuff that you would expect to find is there. I mean, things like proper message queues and all sorts of other things that are part of it. They're all there and everybody's happy. But once you start getting into some of the sponsored TLDs or some of the CC TLDs and with all sorts of, I'll be politically correct and say interesting policies, it becomes quite challenging, to say the least. Honestly, you wouldn't get much resistance from me personally if there was more uniformity in how this stuff is implemented at a technical level. But it's never going to be 100% uniform because they have to allow for policy differences. So, you know, you've got my support at one level, but I've also been pragmatic in saying, you know, it's never going to be as uniform as we might like.
Yeah, and I guess I'm not headed for uniform. I'm headed for a forum where the conversation can take place, if nothing else. I mean, you know, this I'm sure where Barry's coming from, it certainly reminds me of the same thing, is, you know, if you use any of the big enterprise software packages, like SAP for, you know, your enterprise management system, there's a user community that's very active that converses with the vendor about what features go in and when and what's higher priority and what hurts and what doesn't. And it seems like there needs to be a place where registrars and registries could have a conversation about sort of the technical slash operational issues associated with EPP. Not that you'd wind up with a uniform EPP, but at least you'd know what was coming down the queue.
Mikey, this is Barry, and I'll just add to that, you know, from my experiences, you know, you have this, your example to enterprise resource management type systems. You know, I've experienced countless times where customers would customize the heck out of the software, and then they get to a point where they can't even upgrade to the latest code. And so I apologize to derail the conversation like this, but it's only going to get much worse once the new Gs come out, because all of these different community-based registries are going to have all their different mechanisms for how a domain gets registered. So, you know, it's just going to become a bigger spaghetti bowl. So thank you for the discussion.
Okay, thank you, Barry.
And I am now done.
Okay. I'll just point out, we were talking originally about uniformity, then decided it was too complex an issue for us, so we end up back where we are today. All right, so we're going to have some drafts out from Barry or Mikey out of that one. The next one is the one numbered 16, which is what we were originally talking about as being a requirement and is being demoted to a best practice of basically not knowingly, to the extent that you know it, sending messages to addresses that don't exist anymore. I don't think there's any requirement to do it, and clearly in many cases, as Michaeli has pointed out, you may not be aware of the fact that it is not working, in which case you don't have any obligation. Comments on that? In absence of comments, we'll presume to be okay. And 17 is the one that was deleted. That is was put into 15, I think, and may go back again, depending on what comes out of the Paul and James discussion later on. Marika, I presume out of this we will come out with yet another version of this in a day or so. What are your thoughts on how we get this into the report and end up having a close to a final draft report to look at next week in our last meeting?
This is Marika. I actually sent out earlier today an updated version of the proposed final report, in which I already incorporated some of the suggestions that people had made on the previous calls, and also reorganized the report a bit so So it becomes clear. I've already created there the placeholders to insert the recommendation. So once we finalize the language, hopefully it will be relatively straightforward. I did encourage people on the mailing list because we had some discussion because some changes were made to the background section, which was a cut and paste from the issues report and has moved now to the annexes, to encourage people to actually review the working group deliberation section to see if there's anything missing there, that people feel that there's not a complete picture or anything misstated. So if there's anything still in there, would hope people would raise the flag on that as soon as possible. But I think from my perspective, as soon as we can finalize this language, I can slot it into the report. I think the objective would be as well to try to categorize each of these recommendations with the respective charter questions, so it's clear as well for the audience how we've answered the charter questions, although that can be deducted as well from the other parts in the report. And then my last task will be, once we've gone through the report and fixed any final issues, to write the executive summary. And I think that's it. And just decide on duration of the public comment period. That's another outstanding item.
All right, Marika, you raised an issue with me about shouldn't we have a recommendation to not do anything about our fifth charter item, that is the one discussing transfer during an RGP. And I wrote a draft. I guess that was in my private email to you, but why don't you incorporate that in the next revision also?
Okay.
And I think our conclusion was it's complex, it opens us up for potential problems, and it's not really needed anymore if the RGP is mandatory. All right. Is there anything else we need to discuss today? I think the intention, Marika, will get out a revision based on today's discussion pretty quickly. And Marika, you can just send that directly to the list, I would think, to eliminate any delay on my part. And then we'll incorporate things coming out of emails over the next day or so in another revision of it, perhaps late Thursday, and then start a poll right immediately after that, perhaps, or the email quasi-poll. That sound reasonable in terms of your timing, Marika?
Yes.
Alan, Cheryl here.
Yep, go ahead.
Sorry, I stepped away from the computer, so I need to sort of make noises.
That's okay.
Just on the, and thank you, Marika, for that recent update of the report. I actually managed to finish reading it just before the meeting started. Alan, I wondered with the insert X for numbers of days on public comment, are we going to request that it is a 45-day one, so that as a basically an ALAC instigated request, we can ensure that it does go out to our local language communities in all the different languages. Just seems to me that whenever we do a 30-day and then the languages come out later, then we need to extend for 15 anyway. Should we try and cut our losses and just put insert 45 days into this for this particular
part? My inclination is if what we did last time is we had to come out shortly after the meeting is over. If this meeting follows patterns of previous meetings, there'll be a whole slew of things coming out just after the meeting.
Yeah, it's going to be crowded.
So I think it's worth our while to make it as long as we realistically can. There's not a lot of merit in making it short and then extending or making it too short and not getting the answers because people are overwhelmed with too many reports that they have to comment on at the same time.
Well, if we just do it for the 45 days in the report now and then make sure that people get a heads up in the language issue, I think that should be fine.
I think so.
And there's no loss in that, but it saves us having to go through the administrivia of making the requests and probably not getting the requests until 27 days into the process anyway.
And having to wait for approval and things like that,
whereas
if we set the time, it's simply set.
Yeah, I'd cut the losses and just do it to the maximum, unless...
You've sold me. Any objections, Marika?
Yeah, it doesn't break out. No objections to the 45 days. I think it makes sense as well as we're running over an ICANN meeting. So, it normally takes out already a week or a week and a half of people's time. Just a question on translation. Do I understand correctly that the ALIC would get the report translated for its communities and you would put that request in? Or is there any expectation that...
It would expect, like all other policy development processes, for it to come out in the required languages.
I think our norm now is at least the executive summary and presumably the recommendations if they're not embedded in the executive summary.
Right, so the expectation is that it comes from policy departments?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, I'll need to check on that budget-wise, because I mean, normally we do it for initial reports and final reports, and this is an interim stage, but hopefully it shouldn't be...
even if it comes from the ALAC, it's still a policy department.
Yeah.
But if you'd like to transfer to the ALAC instead of GNSO, we'd be delighted to have you.
Don't think so.
Anything else that we need to talk about, people? We have 16 minutes that I'm willing to give back to you for free.
Don't take our Mariko away from us.
I don't think it's our call. Sadly to say. And besides, I participate in too many GNSO activities to say to even recommend that. Okay. Seeing no hands, seeing no objections, thank you for a productive meeting. Let's hope in email we can tie all these things up so we go into the next meeting having a relatively locked-in set of recommendations. And have a good rest of the day and tomorrow. Thank you all.
Thanks, Alan.
Thanks, Alan.
Thanks, Alan.
Bye.